All right. Today, we're having an adventure in grammar as we read through Mark chapter 9, starting at 14, and all the way through verse 29. So I'm going to read the whole section, and we're going to talk about some of the challenges for those who are listening, those who are reading, and what it means. So let's start. Mark chapter 9, starting at verse 14. And when they, the people, came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them and scribes arguing with them. And immediately all the crowd, when they saw him, were greatly amazed and ran up to him and greeted him. And he asked them, "What are you arguing about with them?" And someone from the crowd answered him, "Teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a spirit that makes him mute, and whenever it seizes him, it throws him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able." And he answered them, "O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me." And they brought the boy to him, and when the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked his father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From childhood, and it has often cast him into fire and into water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us." And Jesus said to him, "If you can, all things are possible for one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out and said, "I believe, help my unbelief." And when Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." And after crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, "He is dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. When he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" And he said to them, "This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer." So the adventure in grammar today has to do with the words faithless and belief and help my unbelief, these things that we often hear, and especially the verse that the man utters, immediately the father of the child cried out and said, "I believe, help my unbelief." We often use that verse, and I think we often use it wrong. And we equate unbelief with doubt. We do the same thing with doubting Thomas, or Thomas, the disciple whom we often call doubting Thomas, that there's something different about unbelief than doubt. And here in this context of Mark chapter 9, there's definitely something different going on, that unbelief can't mean what we often equate unbelief meaning. And when we as Christians hear the word unbelief, we think, outside of the grace of God, we think unbelief is, the damnable sin, that unbelief is what, causes you to be separate from God. I don't think that this is the kind of unbelief that the man is struggling with. And so we want to talk about some grammar stuff. And mainly, I want to talk about prefixes that we add on to words to either make them negative or to negate them. In other words, in order to sort of cancel them out. I'll bring up one that's really popular right now, having to do with the virus. That somebody who is symptomatic has the virus and is showing symptoms. Somebody who is asymptomatic can have the virus and not show symptoms. And I know this isn't a word, but I'm going to use it anyway. But somebody who is unsymptomatic could possibly be somebody who doesn't have the virus and isn't showing signs. So there's a difference between being symptomatic, asymptomatic, and either unsymptomatic or non-symptomatic. That there's not a necessarily a negative context to it. Somebody who's asymptomatic simply isn't showing the signs of having the virus. Another one that we use a lot of times, somebody who believes in a God is often called a theist. And so we have a theist is somebody who believes in a God. And then we have an atheist is somebody who doesn't believe in God. This is often where we equate a lot of people who aren't just atheist, in other words, that they're just not believing, it's they are anti-theist. And I think there are some people who we put into a camp of atheist when really what they are is anti-theist. They're not just not believing, but they are vehemently against anyone who does believe. There's a difference. Somebody who doesn't believe in a God simply says, I don't believe in a God. I believe in science or, whatever the principles that I operate under. But somebody who is anti-theist will say, well, those who believe in God are this and that, and call them names or whatever. So there's a difference between being against something and simply not displaying the qualities of something. And so when we hear in this context, I believe, help my unbelief, I prefer, and this is maybe just me, I prefer to think of it as non-belief, not unbelief. He's not against believing. In fact, he says he believes. In other words, he has faith. I want to put it this way. He has faith. Faith enough to bring his son to the disciples, faith enough to bring the boy to Jesus, faith enough that these guys can do something for his son. What is then this unbelief that he talks about? Well, the grammar in the Greek is that they put an alpha in front of the word. So it's pisteo, which is faith, and then it's apisteo, which is non-faith. We put it belief and unbelief. But I think we often look at it in a negative, judgmental context. But in this Mark chapter, I don't think it's about being judgmental. I don't think it's a judgment call that we can make on this man. He has faith, but he struggles with showing the signs of his faith. He has faith, but he struggles with living it out. He has faith. In other words, he's brought his son to Jesus to be saved. He has faith, but he has trouble manifesting it. He has trouble showing it, living it out and demonstrating it and living by it. It's not that he's against faith. It's not that he's struggling between not believing in God and believing in God. He believes in Jesus. He has faith in Jesus. He's just struggling with showing that. And I don't want to minimize it, and saying that, it's not important, because it is. But I think this is a non-judgmental part of the gospel here. The man isn't being judged on his unbelief. The man is showing faith. He's just struggling with putting it out there, manifesting it, living by it, speaking it. And that's that if, he says, if you can do anything. It's not that he doesn't think Jesus can do anything. He's not sort of saying, well, if you can do something, go ahead and do something. No, he's saying, this is a begging thing. Please do something. I have faith that you can do something. The if is just conditional. It's just something that we say. And Jesus picks up on that and he says, well, all things are possible for those who believe. And he says, I do. I have faith. Jesus knows he has faith. He's just pushing the man to show it, to speak it, to say it, to live it. The disciples are in the same boat. Remember, they had tried to cast out the demon. It didn't work for them. It's not that they don't believe in Jesus. It's not that they don't believe in the power of God. It's not that they just can't figure out how to put it into practice to where it's effective, where it's doing something. They have faith. They just are having trouble putting it out there. So think of it this way. That the gift of faith that God gives us is a passive faith. We receive it. We receive this passive faith into our hearts. We receive that faith through the hearing of the word, through the holy baptism, through the presence of God in our lives. We receive faith through the word, and we have it. It's not something that we've earned or worked for or done anything like that. We have been given this faith. But sometimes we have trouble showing it. We have trouble living it out. It's not that we don't believe. It's not that we've forsaken our faith. It's not that we've thrown it to the side or under the bus. The fact is, we have this faith. Sometimes it's difficult to manifest. It's difficult to show it. And I think that's where the man and the disciples are in this case. That's where we are in this case. That we have this faith. It's there, it's passive, it's a gift. We just are struggling with the active sense of it. What do we do with it? How do we live this out? How does this look different? So quickly, I want to just reiterate or sort of recast Thomas. And just for comparison, this is just for comparison. At the end of the Gospel of John, when Jesus has died, been buried, and rose again, at the end of the Gospel of John, he appears to the disciples. Thomas, called the twin, isn't with them. And he shows them, his hands and his side and eats with them, and they believe that he's there. Well, Thomas comes back and they tell him all about it. And Thomas says, I am not going to believe unless I see it with my own eyes. Now, Thomas is not a, he has faith, but he's sort of having trouble showing it. No, Thomas's faith is different in this sense. And in other words, he's willing to walk away from it all unless he sees something happen. He's willing to jettison everything that he's spent time with Jesus for, and unless Jesus could show up and show him himself. That's why Jesus comes down so hard on Thomas in that gospel. That you believe because you've seen. Blessed are the people who have not seen and yet believe. He comes down pretty hard on Thomas because Thomas was ready to walk away. This man in Mark chapter 9, he's not walking away. So they're not the same. Even though the language is similar, it's not the same thing. There are those who, if Jesus doesn't show up, well, I just don't believe anymore. You see that all the time. Well, I prayed and prayed and prayed and nothing happened, so I'm walking away from it all. There are those who would say, well, if God were real, then this world would not be in the mess that it's in. God would have fixed it. And so they don't believe in God because it doesn't look like he is doing anything to them or for them. This man has faith. The disciples have faith. You and I have faith as a gift. We just struggle sometimes with living that out and letting it show up in our lives. So this whole thing is having to do with the idea of un versus non. That this guy would probably be better served to say, I believe, help my non-belief, help my non-putting it out there. Not my unbelief in terms of walking away from it. That's a unbelief sounds a little bit more judgmental. And I know I'm probably splitting hairs. And if I, did a year's study in the Greek of this text, I probably could, situate it a little bit better. But to me, this non versus un, this A versus blank, this kind of thing that we need to get this under control in our heads. So what does that look like in our lives? How do we walk that out? And our non-belief, our times when we struggle with showing that faith in life, it's not overcome because we struggle with this and we want to fix it. And so we look for all of these ways to fix this display of our belief in our lives, our faith in our lives. But the fact is that we can't overcome it. The man can't overcome it. It's faith that overcomes. And you see what Jesus does for him. He doesn't say, well, you're struggling with your unbelief, so I'm not going to work with you. He does the same to Thomas, even though he comes down pretty hard on Thomas, he still shows up and shows Thomas. And here, he still casts out the demon. And then, as the boy lay there on the ground, and it says it looks like he was dead, he was a corpse. Jesus takes him by the hand and does what? He raises him up. So a little glimpse of resurrection hope. Jesus, even in the midst of the non-belief, even in the midst of trying to live out our faith, Jesus still displays that resurrection hope. He still works despite our struggles with those times. And that's the beauty of living this Christian life, is that we can struggle in that. We can struggle in carrying it out. We can struggle in the doing of our faith. And yet Jesus still does. He still works. He still acts. He still persists in loving and forgiving us. And I think, you know, sometimes, probably 99% of the time, our non-belief is presented, we see it in sort of the mundane everything, you know, everyday life. We don't know that we're necessarily displaying our faith. But because that faith is in us, we are. Because God presents us with these opportunities, we do show our faith. And that 1% of the time, it's like the Mountain of Transfiguration, you know, where the disciples go up with Jesus on the mountain and it's, you know, glowing with the glory of God and there's Moses and Elijah and it's this momentous thing. You know, we get those things in our lives roughly 1%. It's the regular stuff that we struggle with. It's the regular stuff that says, help my non-belief. Help my living this out. Help my taking my faith to the streets. And it's Jesus who does that with us and for us. The lived experience of faith in Christ, it looks different for everybody depending on their situation in life, their vocation in life, where God has placed them. But Jesus is consistent, persistent, and always at work. So Jesus, we believe, help our non-belief, our times when we struggle with displaying that faith in our lives. Amen.